This is the Skirted Roundtable. I'm Linda Merrill from Surroundings.
And this is Megan Arquette from Beach Bungalow 8.
And Joni Webb with Cove to Texas.
And this week on the Skirted Roundtable, we are very happy and joyous, actually, to be welcoming fellow interior designer and blogger Scott Meacham Wood from the fabulous blog Tartan Scott and the fabulous interior design firm based in San Francisco. So, Scott, thank you so much for joining us at the Skirted Roundtable.
Oh, you are so welcome. It's so nice to be here.
Well, you're one of, I think we could all say, one of all of our favorite people. And, you know, on Facebook and the blogs and everything, just always really nice voice of a sunny, fresh air. And so, like we do with everybody, we want to hear all about you and how your journey from Mississippi to San Francisco. So tell us all about yourself.
Mississippi.
It starts before that. Hang on, kid.
Wait, Canada, Japan. Canada.
My father was in the military. I'm an Air Force brat, so I was actually born in southern Canada, in Ottawa, and then spent a couple of years outside of Miami in a little town called Homestead, and then 2 years when my father was stationed in South Korea, which was great fun.
How old were you then?
That was first and second grade, so 5 and 6 years old.
In Korea?
In South Korea. Oh, and it was, the crazy thing about being like a military kid was that, I mean, it sounds so like kind of glamorous and romantic in some weird way, but everybody that I knew was a military kid, so it wasn't like any of us were really all that interesting to each other because everybody had kind of lived everywhere. So it was a great way to grow up. I really liked that I traveled so much as a youngster. And that I had a passport when I was 6 months old because that's when we moved from Canada to Florida. So we were a mobile tribe, my family and I. After South Korea, we were based outside of Los Angeles for a couple of years in San Bernardino. And then my father actually is from Mississippi, and he retired after our stationing in Southern California and moved back to the family land. It's been in my family for generations in Mississippi. So I did kind of like junior high and high school and college in Mississippi. But prior to that, I was kind of everywhere. It was fun. It was a great way to grow up.
What town?
In Louisville, a wonderful tiny little town called Louisville, Mississippi. It's kind of near Tuscaloosa, Alabama, if you know the area. It's kind of across the border from Tuscaloosa.
You and I have had so many lengthy, long lunches and brunches at this point. And I know you've told me, but did you move from Mississippi to San Francisco directly?
I was in Breckenridge, Colorado for a couple of years. Right after college, I lived in Breckenridge at the ski resort for two ski seasons and then one summer season between them, which was great fun.
You were a ski bum?
It was hilarious. I actually busted my knee skiing my senior year in college, so I really couldn't ski by the time I was living in Colorado, which made me, I think, one of the most employable human beings on the face of Colorado.
I can imagine.
Because of my military
showed up.
But actually, I would show up to work when I was supposed to, because that's kind of how I was raised, and I never thought that was interesting until I discovered that people didn't actually do that. I was like a little shop manager within like a month of being hired because I would actually go and unlock the doors and open the store because that's what I was asked to do, and was shocked to find out that that's not how everybody operated their lives.
Where did you go to college? I'm sorry.
I was at Mississippi State.
Okay.
Were you there for interior design or architecture or anything?
Strangely enough, I started there on a piano scholarship, on a piano performance scholarship.
Scott, I knew you had a music degree. I don't know how I knew that. That's what we that's what we have in common as our music degrees.
I ended up getting a minor in piano, and I was actually thinking about going to law school, and so my major actually is in accounting.
Huh?
So I have a business degree. I studied interior design, but didn't actually get a degree in it. I studied in college and loved it, because I was kind of off to law school, which didn't play out the way that I thought it would. And that's kind of when I escaped to Colorado to kind of blow off some steam.
So you did take interior design courses in college?
Yes. And loved it. I never really saw it at that point in my life as something that I would do as a career. I just had an interest in the artistic aspects of it.
And then once you headed on west, how did you get into interior design? Was it your time at Polo?
It was fun to, I kind of fell backwards into it, where, the way several people that I think you've talked to have done. I was at Polo, well, I started, when I left Colorado, I was when I moved to San Francisco, and started working with Ralph Lauren, working on the sales floor at a, at the store in San Jose and the store in Palo Alto, and would frequently take even like take vacation time from my time on the sales floor to work when they did the big kind of home change installations twice a year when each of the new seasons were brought in, because I loved being involved in not only the artistic aspects of it, but in some ways almost the theatrical aspects of it, because Polo, of course, is fairly theatrical anyway, and just loved it. And was fascinated by it, fascinated by the construction aspects of it and the way that we would take these very simple, you know, it would be, it's four walls and a floor, these little showrooms in the store. And for fall, it would be this fantastic English manor, full of antiques and antique rugs and huge chandeliers. And we'd rip all of that out in the course of like 4 or 5 days. And it would be a New York penthouse, you know, by the next Monday when we needed it for the new season.
Did you all get to come up with it on your own, or did they give you, because I've worked in these similar situations and they, we were given these packets and then all the antiques were shipped to us and then we had product that we were supposed to feature, or did you, did they let you sort of do what you wanted?
It was, I mean, definitely, I mean, there are these showrooms that debut in New York that are very specific, and that's what Mr. Lauren has approved and how he wants his stores to look. And that means that's what he is selling. That's the look that he's chosen for that season. But every store is different. Every space is different. It was kind of more about space planning and styling, which is one thing that I love to do anyway. So it was just taking a kind of predetermined package and making it really sing and really exciting in these kind of existing spaces that we had every season. It was an amazing education for different furniture styles, for different aesthetics, because I mean, most seasons we'd have like a little English drawing room. There'd be this, you know, fantastic, maybe this like a French atelier, and there would be another room that would be a New York loft, and we would work on all of them at the same time. So you were dealing with all these different aesthetics every season. It was really exciting and a great way to learn even more about design and about styling.
How long were you there at Ralph Lauren?
I was with Polo for 13 years.
Wow.
I left Polo right before Christmas of 2001.
Do you think...
What was your last position there?
In creative. I was working doing windows and doing home collection changeovers.
For all the stores or just one?
I was based in Northern California, either based in Palo Alto store or the San Francisco store. Just kind of, the store in Palo Alto, and this will delight people who know that store, was my first store opening. In some ways, it's like my first child. I love that store. It is just a glamorous, wondrous little space. And it's very near and dear to my heart, so I would often work based out of that store because I love that space so much.
Now, you said you you left there in December of 2001. Did 9/11? I think 9/11 had a lot to do with a lot of people sort of making a big change.
It was a change that I actually took a lot of 2002 off. I did some traveling. I went to stay with my parents for about 6 weeks. I was in Europe and England for about almost 2 months. It was almost like a year of semi-retirement. I think like a lot of people, it called into play so much of what your life and what you wanted your life to be about, and what do you want to show for your life when it was completed.
Yeah.
And I wasn't sure that, you know, I wanted, you know, the most fantastic cruise window in San Francisco to be, you know, my legacy to the world. That I was hoping that I could do so much more than that. So I took some time off. I mean, and frequently when we were working at the store, inevitably you're like sitting at, you know, 4 p.m, you most likely spent the night in the store getting like putting Christmas in, and you're like wiring lights onto trees just kind of blindly because you've been wiring lights onto trees for like a day and a half. And someone would walk by like, oh, I wish you'd come do that at my house. And I'd always kind of laugh. I'm like, I don't have time to come do your house. I'm like here 60 hours a week. But I had always made some kind of mental notes of people that had been interested in me working on their homes. And after I got back from Europe, after that little trip, in the middle of 2002, I just got out my Rolodex, back in the old days when there was a Rolodex, and flipped through some cards and some names that I'd kept on file and made some phone calls. And it was so funny. Actually, this is kind of part of a longer story. Let's see if I can operate in all these different planes at one time. I called a woman who has a house down in Atherton. She answered the phone, told her where I was. I'm like, you may remember my name is Scott Wood, and I used to work at Polo. We talked once about me working in your house. And I think she may have almost burst into tears. She was so excited. She's like, I've always wanted to work in your house. And she said, honestly, the contractor is pulling out of the driveway. We just finished a remodel. And could you be here at 11 o'clock in the morning?
Oh my gosh, God.
I will absolutely be at your house first thing in the morning. And went down, and I didn't quite know what I was going to do. And we kind of worked it out and figured it out together. She had some beautiful pieces, but they definitely had reconfigured the house. So it was a lot about just taking her existing furniture and just figuring out how we're going to use it in the new space and reimagine some of the rooms and some of the furnishings. And she has been, I think, one of my dearest and most favorite clients. I've done a couple of her houses. And in fact, when I, Megan, when I saw you down in LA last week, and I said I had to fly back because I had a client who had a party, it was her house. I've worked on the house kind of in and out for the last like 6 or 7 years. I'll go in like once or twice a year and just kind of reprop things or go make all new pillows every once in a while and kind of keep the house fresh. And I did their vacation home on the East Coast a couple of years ago. They're just, I love her. She's been just such a sweetheart and such a great kind of patron of my work and such a great supporter of mine. So as a first client, she really set the bar incredibly high.
Yeah, wow. But you know,
what you expect your clients to be like. Is that what you mean by setting the bar high?
Yes.
Yeah.
And a lot of my, I don't know if it's by design or by nature or just because of the way that I work, a great deal of my projects and a great deal of my clients are incredibly collaborative. I really like when clients bring a lot to the table as far as the way they want to live and the way they want to experience their lives in their home. And so that's it's very common for me to be very kind of loose in the way that we design things. I've never, and this is just the way that I work, I'm more than happy at, you know, halfway through the project about, what if we did this? As long as we haven't ordered too much furniture or too much fabric. And it's, I think once the wheels start going, I hate to stop the wheels moving in the first, you know, month of the project. I hate making all those like hard and fast and life and death decisions right as we're starting. And I'd much rather kind of continue playing with the space and playing with the way you're going to live there, even throughout the entire project. And we need to reimagine something. I'm completely at peace with that. And she was very good about that. That's one thing that we kind of worked on together when we were doing the house, both her house here in California and the house on the East Coast. I think that's unusual, I think, for other designers. I don't know.
I think it is. Because, I mean, from all the people that we've talked to, I'm always surprised when people, you know, they have the design, they wrap it up, they present it, and boom, that's done. It's static. That's what's going on. That's what's going to happen. I like hearing that you do it in the way that you do, where it's an evolutionary process. I mean, there's an idea, and then it has room to evolve. So do you talk to your client about that in the beginning so that their expectations are managed from the beginning?
I think, yeah, I hope so. That's one of the great challenges of what we do is, I mean, it's really funny, like, talking about things being static. I mean, I'm probably going to leave maybe the second or third meeting that I have with a client with, like, a huge check and the keys to their house. It can be kind of invasive what we do for a living. And I want to make sure that people know that they're still, that's strict. It's design. It's not, one of the analogies I use with clients sometimes is that it's not baking, which is like science. It's cooking, which is art. So if I pitch, we're going to make, you know, we're going to make cranberry scones, whatever. And we find out, you know, 2 weeks into it that their great grandmother's allergic to cranberries or whatever the reason is, then we make blueberry scones and it's just different, but it's still going to be beautiful and it's still going to be wonderful and they're still going to love it. And if they have that sort of input on the process, then my hope is they'll be even more excited about what the outcome is.
Now, it's interesting because when we talked to Toby Fairley, one of the things she talked about was sort of, you know, not giving the client enormous amounts of choice because
She presents one design scheme, and that's it.
That's kind
and
of
if
it.
The client wants to change a fabric or something. They have one. I think we all work. I know I work so differently than that.
Yeah.
How do you? I'd be curious to see how you work.
I think that's the really exciting thing about the way that our industry is, I wouldn't say standardized, but the fact that it isn't standardized. And you can find the designer that works the way that you need the work to be done. If you don't have, as a client, if I don't have the time and energy to invest an enormous amount of my own creativity in my house, and you want someone that's going to come in and have all the answers, and you can sign a contract and sign a check, and it's just going to happen, and it's going to be beautiful, that's fantastic. That's not the client that I've been drawn to, or that's been drawn to me, or that I've come into contact with. The ones, I think so many of my projects have been more collaborative. Maybe I bring that out in people. Maybe that's just the people that I've come across. I don't know what the answer to that is.
I like that word that you're using, collaborative, because that is how I work. And
you know what? Right. Scott has said something several times that has stuck with me. Scott, you know how you always say at the end of the project, you're going to be driving, you're going to take some photographs and drive away, but they're the ones who are going to have to live in it.
Right.
And I think that's, I would think as a client that would be such a, that would make me, if I were hiring you, feel so at ease that, in the end, you have my back. You get it that this isn't about, beefing up your portfolio. It's really about creating, you're taking into consideration how they're going to live, and you're open to hear their thoughts with your direction.
But how do you feel about, one of the things we did get into with Toby was that if you give the client a lot of choice and the sense that they can always keep asking for something different, it's so hard to get a decision made, and you can hold up. So how do you deal with that?
I tend to bring a fairly, and this is kind of the way that I do my process when I'm
just
when
here.
So I meet someone and they love me and I love them, and we all have to love each other. I'm very big on, like I said, I'm going to be in your business for a year. So we need to really get along. So I'm very, I always interview. The interview is both ways, because I need to make sure that we're all going to get along and that it's going to be a fun and interesting project. I tend to start with space plans and textiles. That's just my process.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of textile driven as an individual. That's kind of where some of my passion is.
That seems to be sort of the general consensus about, we all seem to really like to start with the textiles.
Right. And I like the space on, where's all the furniture going? What do we need to buy? What can we reuse? What can we recover? Because I love to repurpose things if we can, just so there's some sort of continuity in the space from what their old house was into what their new space is going to be. When we're doing the big kind of, when I start pitching ideas, I'll most likely bring, if we need 10 fabrics for a space, I'll bring 30 or 40. We'll lay them on the middle of the cocktail table, and we'll very quickly say, show me your favorite fabric. Really, viscerally, what is your favorite fabric? We get that one and get it in. I'm like, okay, which of these fabrics do you hate? That one gets pulled out. We kind of play that game until I whittle down to maybe the 15 or 20 fabrics that they've got an emotional connection to, or it calls to something in them that they want to have in their house.
Yeah.
And that's when I come back and I'll start working on. Whatever that favorite fabric is, it'll be there. It'll probably be big. I wouldn't take that textile that they really are emotionally connected to and like make a throw pillow out of it. It's going to be a chair. It's going to be something. But that'll be kind of my little key fabric to play with, to work on for the rest of the house.
Yeah, that's exactly how I do it. Exactly.
Oh, that's interesting.
But sometimes my key fabric does end up in a pillow because it might be a $500 fabric,
Right.
But, I will build a whole design scheme around one fabric.
Right.
That they love.
That they love and that I know we have in stock and that I know we can get.
Yes.
But, Scott, I would never presume to tell a client that you're going to love this fabric, and it has to come from them. For me,
And it's really interesting. There are things that I've taken people that they have just looked at like I was insane. Then I'll use it in my house, and that's perfectly fine with me. Like, what do you, like, you're going to see this every morning. This is going to be the chair you sit on, having your tea every afternoon. Like, you need to, you need to at least like it. Right. I'd love if you loved it. And I will tell people, like, okay, you love these three. We need to kind of play with gauge and pattern and textile. So I'm going to bring in these other things just to make this work.
And they never question the other things, usually, once you've got that key fabric.
Once that key fabric is in.
They'll take your, you know, they'll go with your secondary choice, you know, to flesh it out. I always say, I'm going to flesh it out. That's what the word I use.
So, Scott, do you have a minimum when you're working with someone? Is any job too small?
I never turned down a project because the budget was too small.
At times, did you drop that budget?
We talk about budget at least at the second meeting. And unfortunately, I mean, one of the struggles I think with all of us in design is, like, what does a sofa cost? Well, a sofa will cost whatever you can afford to spend on it. It's like asking how much a car costs. It's just a noun. It can cost however much you want it to cost. So basically what I need to know from a budget point of view is, where am I shopping?
Right. That's what I always say. Well, I need to know, we need to talk budget because I need to know where I'm shopping.
Right.
Yeah.
And I don't want to bring you a room that's not as luxurious as you'd like it to be, nor do I need to bring you a room that is so over the top that it's something that you will never be able to afford. Because it's not my job to make you feel badly about your house or your budget. It's my job to take whatever money you have and spend it incredibly well. And maybe we blow, like, Joni, maybe we blow some money on some amazing pillows. Mm-hmm. And that's our budget. And we can find some great pieces and maybe some antiques and work around that and make the room really sing and be really special. But I want to make sure that whatever money we're going to spend, that it's visible, that it's something that you really can see and see and you can enjoy.
Your portfolio is gorgeous.
Oh, sweetie, thank you.
I love, my favorite, I think, is the East Hampton house. I love that bedroom.
Oh, and that actually,
your first client?
Of my first client.
Right, I figured it was. But I love that house is to die for.
That was the greatest. It was so funny. We actually ended up doing so much of that project from my office here in San Francisco, which was crazy. And we'd fly to East Hampton. I think we went maybe four times for, like, either a long weekend or a week each time. And just, I actually took a dear friend of mine that I used to work with at Polo who helped me in the installation of the house. And we got back once and he's like, oh my God, it was like boot camp. Like, we got up every morning at 5 and we worked all day. Because, like, the movers got there at 7. We had to get up, we had to get breakfast, we had to be awake. And then that house was furniture that we bought for the house, furniture that had been in storage that no one knew what it looked like, and furniture that had been in a previous home that no one could quite remember what it was. Mm-hmm. So the first day the truck backed up, we all just stood on the front porch, and it was like hospital triage. Just everything came off the truck, and we're like, oh, I don't know where that's going. Put it on the front porch.
You bought the fabrics, then you recovered everything after?
Some pieces afterwards. And the great thing, and she's such a great client, has such a beautiful eye and such great taste, that we were able, it wasn't like it was a bunch of disparate things that had nothing to do with each other. It actually kind of whipped together pretty quickly. After the first big furniture delivery, I just walked through the house with a legal pad, and I wrote like 18 pages of notes. Of just, okay, you need two little chests for here, like the two little red lacquer chests on the other side of the fireplace. Those were missing. We need like little red lacquer chests for there. I'll find this in San Francisco. Like, we need a console for back here. We need some chairs for here. We need more lighting. We need more artwork. It was just about kind of...
Were the walls done?
What I'm wondering. Like, the bedroom, the walls were...
I think we papered them after the first furniture installation.
And the dining room looks like it's got some kind of a texture.
Grass, it's the grass cloth, and that was done. That actually was based on the dining room they did at the house in Atherton. So we did this kind of replicated that look, because she loved it.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
It was classic, and it really fit with all the furnishings that we knew were coming from the from the other.
Curious, are these her children? Is she young or is she a grandmother? Are those her grandchildren?
Oh, those are her kids.
So she's young.
She's young and fabulous.
Wow. Is that a high-rise she lives in Atherton?
Nope, that's just a beautiful home. It's a 1, 2, 3, 4-bedroom home in Atherton.
Because the family room, I mean, the living room looks a little bit like a, maybe that's a, because of the shears, it looks like a high-rise maybe, but it's not.
Oh, that's not their home. That's a different Atherton project.
Oh, okay. What is their home then?
Atherton 2.
The bottom one.
Atherton 2? Okay. Yes.
I love that picture. The one that comes up. With the back-to-back sofas.
That was fun. When we first walked in the house, that was that first morning at 11 o'clock, she had one of those sofas and loved it. And I'm like, we need to make another one of these. Like, we need, like, a set of flanking sofas. So one of those is actually original, and one of them was a copy that we made just for to get some formal balance in the room. Because it needed more structure in the space because it's such a large living room, and there's so much seating space in there.
I love when there's a center table and a large...
I love that table.
That's a beautiful house. I love how, you know, I love the look of that room, the colors and everything's so textured, and it's very Ralph Lauren looking.
Mm-hmm. And that's where I knew her, that's where we knew each other from.
Right.
So that's definitely played into the aesthetic of the house. And that's, and then her husband collected a lot of Asian antiques, so that's a lot of, that's kind of the mix in the house is of her kind of Ralph Lauren aesthetic mixed with his kind of a little more Eastern aesthetic. It was a great mix, and they're great together. I saw them just last week, and they're still just darling, and I love them to pieces. They're just great, such great clients, and such good friends, which is even more important.
Mm-hmm. Well, what kind of client do you serve? Do you tend to serve younger people, or do you have a...
I've been all over the board, all over the map. There's not been a real. I should write all them down. I mean, I should do that anyway, and see if there's any sort of through line of demographics. It's just kind of the people that I meet. I mean, most all of my clientele is through referral work. So most everybody knows someone that I've worked with. That's, I think every project I've done has been a referral project, with the exception of a couple things I got from when I was working at Polo.
So you haven't had to do. You know, you haven't done, well, I saw that you did like Dining by Design, things like that.
I've been Dining by Design, which was great fun, even though sometimes it's just horrifyingly maddening to do because it's such a tight time schedule. It really is like doing window display, which was fun because it's what I used to do. And I've gotten people who have walked through and raved and ranted and taken business cards and just done everything but kiss me on the mouth. And then I've never heard from them again. Like, fine.
Right.
So as an event, I'm very passionate about the DIFA project and what we're raising money for. So that's what I invest my time in, is raising money for DIFA. And it certainly gives me some presence, some visibility. But it's not as though I just get throngs of clients out of it.
Have you done you've done other shows?
Show houses?
Yeah.
I've done two show houses, but I did them when I worked for Polo. So I've not done them. I've not done them at me yet. And the show house actually is going on in the city right now. I was in New York the week that all the bids were put in because there was some issue with the house, about getting the house set up. So I was out of town the week that it all happened. So I missed the entire thing.
Oh.
And at this point, I've got so many projects going on that I can't imagine doing show house right now. I don't think I have time.
Do you have a staff?
I have a very small staff. I really like still being... I like when clients call the office and they talk to me.
Yeah.
That's part of what I want my client experience to be, that they really just deal with me directly.
Are you friends with Grant Gibson?
I love Grant Gibson. We're good friends.
I mean, it sounds like y'all have a kind of similar... Y'all both live in San Francisco, and...
I don't know if I've talked to Grant about it, but I know I've talked to other friends of mine. Because, I mean, there are some great designers in the city whose work I just thoroughly admire, who are running, you know, huge offices with 15, 20, 25, 30 people. I don't know that I want to do that. I don't know that I want that much responsibility, like, for lack of a better word.
Mm-hmm.
At least for now, that it's a small business that I can have both my hands wrapped around. I know where everything is. I know every fabric that's on order. I know every piece of furniture in the warehouse. I know where every, I know what wattage all the light bulbs are in all the houses. Like, I like that I know all of those details. The business gets much bigger, I would lose some of that.
Well,
not that it's good or bad or indifferent. That's just, that's what I'm comfortable with. Part of it's my control freak issue, which is rampant.
Well, but let's talk about profit in a company. Let's say that, you know, you are on your own and you have a very small staff, a secretary maybe a draftsman, you know.
Right.
Okay. So you maybe got three people. Well, you don't need to take as many projects because you're going to be making, you know, a high profit margin.
Right.
As opposed to someone that does have a big staff that has to take these huge, you know, jobs, a minimum of $500,000 just to keep the business running, to pay the 15 people.
But it also needs a business that size to run a $500,000 project. Or certainly
that's right.
Certainly
right.
To run more than
right.
Two.
You can't take those projects. If
right,
you're, if
but
you
do
die.
You think they make as much? Do you think that they pocket more money, or?
I think it's a
wash of it.
Probably something close to it. I don't know. I've not experienced a business that size, so I don't have anything to compare it to. It is not as though, you know, we've all opened our checkbooks and compared balances with my friends who do have businesses that are that size. I'm fascinated by them, and I. There are days that I would love to, like, walk into an office of 30 people and say, okay, you all get all of this done, and I'm going to go design more or going to go finish on a project that I'm too busy, like, running invoices to get the chance to do. It's not necessarily a fantasy of mine. I can see the appeal of it. I can see the appeal of having that much structure to support your creativity.
And you're managing all those people. I guess you'd have someone to manage all those people.
But you
right,
still have to
right.
do a lot yourself if you're the owner.
And I'm not saying that I have no dreams of being that big. It's just not something that it's not my first goal. If that's something that happens, yay. But there's a point in the business, you know, years ago it was just me and I did everything and that was just maddening.
Yeah.
Because it's way too much for one person to do.
How long were you just solo like that?
It was a couple of years. I mean, I did the East Hampton project by myself.
That's amazing that you did that so far away, looking at all those pictures. It's incredible.
It staggers even me at times that we were able to do that. And then it ran so incredibly smoothly. There were only, I can think of two problems. And one of them being like a light came in the wrong finish. Like that was one of the problems. Was one of the fixtures didn't come in brass, it came in polished silver, and I had almost an emotional meltdown in the foyer of that house. Everything had run so smoothly, and that blasted lamp was in the wrong finish, that I just screamed this horrible obscenities. Like, if this finish is wrong, like, we're, like, 2 days from being done and this lamp is in the wrong finish, I was so annoyed. It was
I do that, too, on an installation day. You know, when one thing goes wrong, I mean, I will just go nuts, just freaking nuts.
Or just, you know, and frightening the homeowner was there, and she's like, is everything okay? I'm like, the fixture's in the wrong color. She's like, so? I'm like, I just want it all to be perfect. I want it to be perfect now. She's so appreciative, and I wanted that to run really smoothly. And ostensibly, it ran incredibly smoothly.
Right.
So
I mean, one lamp doesn't make a terrible project, certainly.
No.
Yeah, but when you're doing an installation, you want it all perfect, you know.
Right.
Yeah, I can
relate. That was one of my favorites. I loved that house. And it was such
I love
it
that good. House, too.
It was great fun working.
That house is insanely beautiful.
How do you present? Do you present with boards or, I mean, how do you present a design concept to your client? Do you have a certain way that you do it or?
Well, clearly it's kind of fluid because that's kind of my process anyway. I have done like big design boards. It was interesting listening when you were chatting with Toby last week about having things on push pins that it was still really manageable.
Yeah.
That's very much like what I do. I don't have things like spray mounted to, and all set up with all sorts of signs and labels. That doesn't work for me, and that doesn't work for the way that I work with clients. There's always a floor plan, and there's always a lot of fabrics, and I'll bring some like lighting, some finishes, some finished samples. So we've got some that we're working with. But I often, and those boards will just get sometimes just decimated in the middle of a presentation. But I'm like, well, if you don't like this, that comes off. You love this, we'll move this, make this bigger. Because it needs to be
malleable.
Yeah, and energetic, and it needs to feel like there's some movement to it, and that it's not something. Mm-hmm. And again, that's just the way that I work, and that's the only way that I know how to work is the way that I work. So that's me.
You know what I think is interesting? When you go to school for interior design, they really don't teach you these sorts of things, and it's one of those things I always thought, oh, that someone needs to get in there and teach the students all this. But you know, the more I listen to people and the more that we have people on the show and I hear how everyone has found a way to do it differently, maybe there really isn't a right way. There isn't the exact way that works. It works for you that way, and it works for your clients that way, and it works obviously quite well.
And I think one of the best experiences that I had at Ralph Lauren for my current business is I worked on the sales floor for 4 years, both selling in the men's department and selling in home collection. And just having that experience of how to deal with a client and what their expectations may or may not be of that sales experience, and how to make that the best experience for them, that I think that was incredibly invaluable for the work that I do now.
Did Ralph Lauren have a certain sort of credo that you had to follow? Is there, always make the customer happy, obviously, but I mean, what do they have a certain training that they would put people through that you've used?
I don't remember it being specifically said, and over the course of the many years that I was there, there were different people who come in with different sales ideas, and I've heard lots of them. The thing that I most remember about being there, and the one phrase that I always took away with me, was it was never about the sale as far as like what the dollar actually was. It was about the experience of the sale.
Hmm.
So that if they had a really great time, they would come back. I mean, the dollars would come in maybe over a longer period. If people had a great time while they were shopping, it's strange that that isn't everybody's point of view, but that was the big thing with me, is that the people had a great time when they were shopping, that they walked up with beautiful things that they loved, and that the experience they had with me as a salesperson and what their experience was in the store was amazing and memorable, and that's what they think of every time they put whatever that item of clothing was on. That sweater that we bought, from the guy in Palo Alto, wasn't that a great day? Didn't we have a great time? Wasn't it fun?
Mm-hmm.
And that may all be self-created, but that's what I took away from it.
You can really see his influence. I know we just said that in your design, but especially in your apartment.
Yeah.
It looks like it's it could be a show, in the showroom.
And what's funny is Scott right now is sitting in his apartment, and it's completely, he's torn that apart. He's redoing the whole thing.
It's completely empty. That's why there's such good acoustics in here. It's just my bed on a frame, this beautiful antique mahogany dresser, and nothing else.
What are you going to do?
Oh, Joni, that's going to have to be a surprise for another day.
The big reveal.
Well, just one more day?
So it's all out being reimagined. I actually ended up painting my bedroom the night of the Oscars, because I would like take breaks. I would like during commercial breaks, I would paint the house and I'd let it dry while the show was on. And
wait a minute, you have a bedroom?
Yes.
Okay, it's not a studio.
No.
Well, so you have a couch in your bedroom?
Yes.
Okay.
I always thought you had a studio. I thought it was a hallway you went down. It was one big studio.
Yeah, we discussed that.
we've talked about it.
Talking about my house. Talking about me behind my back.
No, I think we recorded it.
The challenge of my house, which is, I think, a challenge to anyone who's living in a small space, I need a bedroom, I need a dining room, and I need a living room. And I have two rooms. So something's got to give somewhere. And for the longest time, it was the dining room that I kind of sacrificed to that. After the last couple holiday seasons, I can create a dining room back in my back study. but it involves like movers and taking things out to storage and bringing the dining table in and pulling in other chairs in my storage unit. And it's not something that if someone called me on the middle of a Sunday afternoon, I could just make dinner. I could serve dinner at my house. It's always got to be kind of a production number to entertain here. And I hate that. As a Southerner, not to be able to entertain on a moment's notice has driven me insane for years. So I took kind of the big living room space in the front of the apartment and made my bedroom out of it. But there's enough space in here to have a bedroom and a really large seating area, which is that kind of living room space.
Mm-hmm.
And then the back of the house, which is at times a study, is now officially going to be a dining room. I found a great dining table a couple of months ago, which is kind of the impetus for a lot of this. So,
do you have favorite places that you like that you hit shopping wise?
Furniture wise, this is probably part of a bigger conversation. I think for most every project that I have done for at least the last 4 or 5 years, I've ended up designing at least one or two pieces of furniture for that project, because there's inevitably some sofa style or chair style or some part of something that I can't find in the marketplace. So I've just been designing a lot more, which has been great fun. I love designing furniture. So I've taken part of this project in doing the house and really experimented and played with much more furniture design. So most of the furniture for the house, with limited exception, are going to be pieces actually that I'm working on to design. So that's kind of cut my shopping down a little bit. That I get to shop at textiles, which is what I love to do anyway.
And do you have go-to showrooms that you tend to revisit?
Big fan of, there's a showroom that's based here in San Francisco called Shears and Window. Mm-hmm. They have Jim Thompson and Pierre Frey and Susan Tucker's new line, and they carry Michael Smith's textiles and Rose Harlow, Old World Weavers, which are a lot of my kind of go-to fabrics. And I love Lee Jofa. I love all those English
I love Lee Jofa.
I love Lee Jofa. And
yeah,
they've been great friends of mine. I have great friends who work in that showroom. So that's a fairly common haunt of mine as well. And then I've been doing so much Philip Jeffries wallpaper for the last, 4 years. I still, every day, expect them to have sent, a pony to me in my office. Every time the bell rings, I'm like, oh, my God, it's made up pony from Philip Jeffries. Because I keep buying more wallpaper from them. I love all those natural wallpapers. They just make me happy.
So is that dining room in the Hamptons, that's Philip Jeffries?
Yes.
Yeah, it's fabulous.
Yes. Okay, back to your apartment.
Okay.
The room with the large painting, that's going to be the dining room now?
That painting is one of the few things that's staying.
Oh, good.
Uh-huh. What about the dark walls? Are those going?
The dark walls in the bedroom, which used to be an olive color called Warwick Lodge, are now Benton Moore Gentleman's Gray, which is not... It's very gentlemanly, and there's not a speck of gray in it anywhere. It's this fantastic kind of turquoisey, tealish, navy color.
Yeah, I think you and I were chatting on Facebook, and you mentioned it. You couldn't mention anything more.
Right.
But you said something about the color.
It's the one that Jennifer Bowles used in her redo.
Of her bathroom.
Well, stop, what were you saying? Yeah, of her bathroom, of her powder.
Yeah, she used it as the accent color in her bathroom.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because I think she paired it with navy. I have to go back and look at that. I looked it up immediately when I started. It was because I finally picked out the color, and then immediately did a Google search on the color to see if anyone had used it, to see what it looked like up, to see if everyone had used it. And it was sad and tired and old. And hers was the only one that came up. So, and actually, she and I have chatted back and forth about it. Yeah, she used it in her bathroom.
Isn't that amazing? I think that's really actually a good tip for people. When they're picking paint colors, it's always, of course, paint a swatch, blah, blah, blah. But I think now with Google, Google your paint color and see what other people have, posted pictures of, because so many paint colors.
I mean, my original horror was, remember the Miles Red, that kind of turquoise, tealish, lacquered living room that was in El Decor maybe last fall? Room that had a wood, a herringbone wood floor.
Yep.
In this color looks similar to that up in here.
And what you didn't want to do, obviously, was make it look like you were channeling Miles Red.
Right.
Copying. Right. He's done it. Now, are you doing this? You've been cagey about what you're working on. Are you doing this for a specific project or?
Well, and are we still off the record?
Well, if we must be.
We haven't been.
And just, you know, between the four of us, or the four of us and everyone else on Earth, depending on how this turns out, the getting published bar is so mobile and so cryptic to try to find. Do I build up press about what I'm doing to my house and hopefully someone will pick up with that and it'll get published? Do I share every like fragment of it and then have it not get published? It's
tricky.
It's tricky.
Yeah.
There are, you know, I keep hearing that if, you know, from most of the major magazines, if anyone's seen it anywhere, they have no interest in it.
Like, That's not true.
That's not true. It is true, actually. It depends on the magazine.
There's a lot of chit chat about this at Design Week, right?
It's not true because I've had several scouts that have taken houses that I've showed on my blog that are in magazines, major magazines.
Then maybe I'll send it to you.
Right. Maybe you have the magic touch, but I've had pictures that were on my blog that I was asked to remove because it was under consideration in a magazine.
Well, I'm just saying that Southern Living is in town right now photographing a house that they got off my blog, and same with Better Homes and Gardens.
But I think that's a challenge for all of us. Whatever that standard is, it is completely mobile.
Right.
So there's not much like the rest of the design business. There isn't any standardization to like how this is done.
Right. It really depends on the editor.
Right.
Margaret Russell said, she said to us, she goes, look, a blog may be 20,000 people. A good blog, 20,000 people. We're reaching 200,000.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, but Joni, I think that, you know, the fact is, I think we've heard as many people and editors say they don't want to see it on blogs as others who say, yeah, I'll be open to that. So I think you can't assume it's fine, and you can't assume it's not fine.
I'd rather be a little more cagey about it. Just make sure that I'm not chopping myself in the foot and like just leak enough details that people are excited about it. And it's fun to play with. And again, like it's so, because it's me and it is my house, it's incredibly fluid. Things have changed like 19 times this week as I keep getting some new ideas and moving some things around. I don't think I could publicize it because it's such a moving target to what it's actually going to end up looking like. It's what I love about playing with my house.
Well, I had done my kitchen over the several months and, you know, pretty much showed every wart and every thing, but what I've not shown on my blog are the final pictures.
Right. You've done a couple detail shots.
They're on my portfolio site because I don't think any magazine is going to say, no, you can't put your own pictures on your own portfolio site.
Right.
But I haven't put them on my blog because I don't want to, I do have it under consideration and I don't want to, you know, just in case.
Right.
You know, ruin anything. But, and like you said, it builds anticipation. I mean, now you've been leaking just enough. Now, do you still have the tartan and all of that sort of stuff going?
There's got to be tartan in the house.
Yes.
And not only is it my trademark as an individual and as a personality, but I love it. I oftentimes wondered why I'm so freakishly passionate about it and why it makes me so incredibly happy. And I've never come up with an honest answer.
You are Scottish, though, aren't you?
I'm Scottish on my mother's side of the family.
Yeah. Is that the Meacham side?
Yes.
Do you have a tartan?
We do, and it's really good. I was so excited when I realized that we had a good tartan.
Are there any pictures of you?
There must be.
How do you not have a picture of you in a full Scottish regalia?
Oh, there must be one somewhere.
On your blog. How come you don't have it as part of your marketing? I mean, there's nothing like a big, tall, handsome man in a kilt. I mean, really, seriously.
I remember doing a photo shoot with me in a kilt. I don't know where those pictures are. I should dig those up. Thank you for reminding me. They're somewhere.
Purely selfish of me.
Well, you probably just like, you know, like I just am drawn to checks. And there's no, it's not because I'm French, you know.
Czechish.
Because you're not Czechoslovakian.
I'm Polish.
You're close.
Well, you do put poles.
So you should like polka dots.
Stripper poles everywhere.
Polka.
You should like polka dots.
Maypoles, whatever.
No, that's Maples. Me. Maypoles, that's my stop. We're back in England now.
Nah, he just likes tartan.
I do. I like the geometry. I like the organization of it. I like, but it still feels, along with the kind of romanticism of all of that, that it evokes.
Now you don't seem like you really like hit on the adhere. I'm trying to think of the word I'm looking for. Like adhere to like what's trendy right now. You have a very classic.
Well, I think I mentioned this when I. Because this color that's in the bedroom now, it does feel a little on the kind of turquoise side, much more than I would have expected it to be when I first started working on it. I'm like, oh my heavens, am I part of some trend now? But in the same way that I would hate for someone to kind of slavishly follow a trend, like, oh, I have to have turquoise in my house because that's because
you know, Pantone said so. Yeah.
I would also hate for anyone, myself included, to not use something that's trendy or of the moment, if that's what really calls out to you, because it's any sort of design trend is never going to last as long as whatever the design trend is. It's not as though we're all repainting our houses every 3 months or all getting new bedding or all, you know, changing the leg styles on the sofas or all changing our curtain treatments every time there's some new fad. So you kind of need to really examine what you're responding to and go with that. And if the only thing that everything in your apartment has in common is you, I'm totally at peace with that. If you're the thing that is the common thread of all of these disparate elements that make you happy, that must be an amazing place to live, because that's really so personal and so specific. And those are the houses that I like to be under. They're the projects that I like to work on. They're the people that I like to know. That's the house I want to be in, where there's a real personal story and connection to the pieces that are there, and not just because it's what we found or what someone has brought to you. That really has a little bit more emotional depth to it than that.
Well, sing us out, baby.
Yeah, let us.
Please do.
I would love to hear you sing.
So, this is for each of you. More than you know, more than you know. Man of my heart, I love you so. Lately I find that you're on my mind more than you know. Whether you're right or whether you're wrong, man of my heart, I'll string along. I love you so, more than you'll ever know.
Thanks, Scott.
That's from y'all. Thank you. This was so much fun. Oh, my God.